The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through JW Cole Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and JW Cole Advisors. JW Cole Financial, JW Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on this show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such person and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI or their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation or any offer to buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Good evening, everyone. Jim Inman here in the studio here at 98.7 FM, The Zone, Bloomington. Glad to have you all here this week. David Hayes is out for the second week in a row, but will be back in the studio next week. Doug Hughes is on assignment, and so you are stuck with me, and hopefully we will take full advantage of the time here today. We'll introduce our guest here in just a couple of moments, and I assure you, I've been behind the microphone a time or two over the years, and it should be a pretty decent show, and I say all of that because I'm not here next week, and David can reprimand me or say whatever he needs to next week, but tonight, all will be good. We're going to get a little bit out of the financial arena this week. We're going to go into estate planning this week. Instead, Dustin Plummer, partner with Maller Grodner Plummer, is going to be joining us here in just a couple of minutes to talk about a variety of aspects related to estate planning. I was in a meeting earlier today and was talking to a group of folks about the show and what to expect. And I said, you know, estate planning is not necessarily where you have a mansion with 14 bedrooms and 18 baths and a pool and 14 cars and all of that. If you own something, you have an estate. So with that said, when you pass away, you want to know that what you have goes to whomever or however or wherever you want it to go, and you want to make sure that it's done right. So we're going to talk to Dustin about all of that here over the next hour or so. So glad that you're joining us here on 98.7 The Zone. If you're catching us Thursday night for the live show, great. If you are catching us for the replay on Saturday morning at 9 a.m., glad to have you. And of course, thezonebloomington.com. You can catch the show starting on Friday mornings or any of your podcast platforms out there as well. And just glad to have you here this week. So David often talks about the national debt and all of the great short-term and long-term things with it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, yesterday, August 19th, we crossed a milestone, good or bad, however you want to look at it, probably bad. We topped $40 trillion in the U.S. national debt yesterday. Mark it on your calendars, ladies and gentlemen. The total public debt outstanding officially hit $40.047 trillion on Tuesday, ticking up from $39.987 trillion the day before. According to an article in the Wall Street Journal, economists typically focus more on a different measure of government debt that is held by the public, which doesn't include debt held within the government in Social Security trust funds. That number was $32.266 trillion on Tuesday. So still, the $40 trillion is a big number, likely to at least briefly draw attention to what economists broadly agree is an unsustainable fiscal trajectory. In recent days, rising long-term government borrowing cost and a sudden reversal on Wednesday after the Treasury announced plans to buy back more long-term debt have underscored the stakes. And again, I know David will be talking much more about this next week. It's no secret that that national debt and that word that was used in the Wall Street Journal, unsustainable, is something that we all need to be considering and looking at. And as David has spoken about before, and I know we'll be speaking about again, it is the national debt. And as U.S. citizens, it's all our debt. So more on that with Mr. Hayes in the coming weeks. We're going to be talking a little bit about AI with Mr. Plummer here in just a little bit. And another article out of the Wall Street Journal on August 16th this week was a breakdown of the financial advice flying all over TikTok. The Financial Industry Regulatory Authority found this week that those who use social media for investment advice rate their investment knowledge higher than those who don't, but perform worse on an objective knowledge test. They are also more susceptible to investment fraud. Kind of makes sense in my mind. A majority of accounts that were reviewed by the Wall Street Journal were run by people who don't appear to have a financial license or certification as an advisor. Many display high balances in their investment accounts to signal that they are trustworthy. Others showcase lavish lives. However, viewers try to learn alongside them, but not really a lot of proof in what they are actually doing. So I bring all of this up to say, you know, AI can make things look really nice and everything, but often objects may not appear as they seem. And we'll talk a little bit about AI over the next hour as well. One other final thing here, again, talking about AI and elder fraud. This came from USA Today. Scammers are out there now scouring obituaries and looking for vulnerabilities when people pass away. A situation came up where a woman was scammed out of more than $7,000. Scammers had reached out to her and told her that her late husband had tax evasion records in order for her to preserve what was left of her inheritance, she had to pay them money. By the time her adult son found out, it was too late. Elder fraud and a variety of things resulted in more than 200,000 cybercrime complaints made to the FBI in 2025 by victims 60 years and older, totaling nearly $8 billion in losses. And those numbers are underreported, according to this article from USA Today. Some of today's sandwich generation caregivers feel compelled to filter their parents' every call, text, instant message, and even snail mail in order to avoid financial devastation of a scam. I've spoken about it here on before. David has talked about it as well. People will get calls, their computer will lock up, and they'll get a pop-up on their screen that says, hey, this is Google Security. You need to call this 1-800 number, and we will unfreeze your computer. And somebody will call that number and speak with someone, and suddenly they will say, we need $49.95 to unfreeze your computer. And then you call and they say, well, just give us your banking information. And somebody does that. And then they say, well, we need to access your computer to get that banking information. Click here, and they do that. And then they start diving through, and then they start getting access to personal accounts. And suddenly, everything is just handed over. You've got to be very, very careful when those kinds of things happen. So more on that in the future. But bottom line is, if you think there's a scam happening, shut your phone off, turn your computer off, power it down, contact a computer expert. There's plenty of things out there, but just don't give anybody access if you do not trust them. Talk to somebody. Just don't do it. That's the bottom line. Call them back, whatever the case may be, but don't do it. Be proactive, be cautious, be aware of things. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Dustin Plummer, partner with Maller Grodner Plummer Attorneys here in town. We're going to be talking estate planning. It's not about death. It's about control. What estate planning actually accomplishes. Lots of big things to talk about over the next hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back here on Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Jim Inman here, Your Money with David Hayes. Glad you are tuning in today. We're excited to welcome our guest here in the studio, my good friend, Mr. Dustin Plummer. He is a partner here with Maller Grodner Plummer in Bloomington. He gave me a 14-page introduction that he asked me to read. I ran it through ChatGPT, Dustin, and it tried to summarize it, but it said 14 pages was the minimum. I apologize.
Thanks.
Alex turns back the music. That was perfect, actually. He's managing partner Maller Grodner for 8 years. Been recognized with Super Lawyers. He's just a good guy in all ways around. So I'm just going to leave it at that. And he has a wonderful wife, Marlene, as well. So Dustin, and you've been on the show before. So thank you for coming back, sir. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. So estate planning is this your main forte, if you will? Like, is this your fun area of expertise, so to speak, or one of.
Fun area is an interesting way to put it. Yes, this is where I spend a lot of my time.
Is it really?
It is.
Yeah. When somebody approaches you about this, if I mean, obviously you get so many questions, but what is one of the one or two, what are one of the top two or three questions that people just hit you with right off the bat?
You know, it really depends on their age, their current life circumstances. And, you know, there are a lot of people who have a lot, they've heard of a lot of nightmares, or mm-hmm. at least some people have been involved in them, but everybody is concerned about what is going to happen when they pass away and who's going to be in charge. Everybody is also very worried that the state or the government is going to get all their money. Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but it's also possible that you and I are going to hit the lottery tonight. And I haven't bought a ticket, so it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. It's funny that you talk about the government situation. I shared with you the phone call that I had the other day of the gentleman who wrote his own trust document with the help of ChatGPT, and I strongly encouraged him to change that and actually get with an attorney, because ChatGPT has not been through law school and knows all of the legal ease, if you will.
It is not. You know, it's interesting, AI, and before that, you know, we had a lot of LegalZoom or other programs that you could go on. I always kind of tongue-in-cheek said I'm a huge proponent of those. And the reason that I am is because we end up making so much more money actually correcting those mistakes than if people come in and just do a little bit of planning. It's that ounce of prevention saying holds really true in the estate planning world.
So probably there are four main documents of estate planning: wills, power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, and then an advanced healthcare directive, like a living will, correct? Are those the main ones that you primarily work with and see?
They are. I mean, the caveat I'd give you there is, you know, the living wills in Indiana, I would say, have a limited usefulness. Frankly, our statute is not great, and it's good that it's been driven through the public conscience that you need a living will. Mm-hmm. The reality is that a good healthcare power of attorney or advanced medical directive will actually get you much further than a living will. The other thing that I will say is, as far as the big four, sometimes you'll trust could be appropriate in addition to a will.
Okay. What happens if you don't have any of these documents, though? Because especially people, I mean, we're still young, although I do have an AARP membership now, but you're younger than me. What happens if you don't have these documents and the time comes that suddenly there is a need for this?
Good news, bad news. So the good news is the state of Indiana has graciously provided all of your listeners with their own estate plan already.
Okay.
The bad news is it often doesn't match up with what people would want. And actually, I'll kind of break this into two categories. So it's fairly straightforward for the will. But when it comes to the advanced directives, meaning power of attorney, healthcare power, there you are actually going to have to look to a court and talk about going down the guardianship route. So we can get there. It's just going to be a lot more expensive. Depending on family dynamics, it could be a highly contentious, hopefully not, but often we see that it is. And then again, it depends on family circumstances. We see a lot of clients who maybe they don't have any living relatives, they don't have any children, or their children are minors, things like that. And so instead of just kind of leaving it to chance and chaos, actually proactively getting some documents in place is a tremendously good idea.
So when you have those documents, and I know that we've been asked this in the office before, and I'm sure you've heard this as well, how do people share those, so to speak? And the reason I say that is, you know, if mom and dad are, say, snowbirds, and they go to Florida 6 months out of the year, whatever the case may be, and something happens, like, do they keep those with you at the attorney's office? Do they take them and put them in a safe deposit box at the bank? How do people know where things are in the event that somebody needs to access them? Because if you are in a car accident, typically medical records are available through the medical system or whatever, but legal documents like this, different story.
This could be a great use for AI, but I haven't seen the solution yet.
Okay. Do you want to share this right now, or are you going to patent this or something that could be useful in the future?
It's a good question. You'd have to get a lot of buy-in from all the attorneys, and okay. that's probably not going to happen.
Okay.
But, no, it's a fantastic question. So, generally speaking, I would say almost all attorneys are going to keep either the originals or at least a copy, a signed copy at their office. And so if the relatives, the kids, or whoever is named in these documents at least know where to call, mm-hmm. that's a great step. So a lot of times people do exactly what you said, as far as they're going to take a copy with them and they're going to put it in a really safe place, be it a safe deposit box or, you know, hidden behind the third drawer in their house, you know, behind the coffee cups.
Yep.
The problem with that is, you know, a lot of times when we need these documents, it's an emergent type situation and people don't know where to find them. And so that's where, at least if they have a contact and they know, hey, here's the attorney that I worked with, then they can reach out to the right people and get going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Is there a misconception of pricing all of this? Because some people feel like, you know, I don't have the mansion with 16 bedrooms and 18 baths and all of this, so is it going to cost me $10 million for what I think is a very simple will or power of attorney or what have you?
Yeah. So it won't, it will not cost $10 million if they mm-hmm. have a simple estate. That's for sure. And I will say, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, more later on, but there are some options as far as controlling what happens to your property when you pass outside of estate planning documents is certainly a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
What you can't really avoid is, and this kind of hits any class depending on how much you have or don't have, is who do you want making decisions if you're alive but incapacitated? With medical technology today, there's a really high chance that at some point in your life, you right. may be alive but unable to make decisions for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so having someone that you trust to make those decisions is a fantastic idea.
And potentially having a backup to that individual as well, as we had a situation in the office the other day of somebody calling in and husband and wife, husband called in, wife has started developing dementia, wife is the primary, so now trying to figure out which of the children and all those other steps, because up until this point, wife has been able to handle things, but now it's starting to look like now we need a second option type thing.
That's right. So I would say really any estate plan should have at least one backup in it, sometimes more.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you're kind of picking at a misconception as well in estate planning. So a lot of people view this as a check-the-box thing. So I need a will or I need these estate planning documents. They come in, they get it done, they check the box, think, good, I don't need to revisit that.
Yep.
The problem is what we see is about every 3 to 5 years is a good cadence to revisit those estate planning documents. The reason for that, the law changes in this area more often than people realize. But in addition, life happens. So
mm-hmm.
people that were maybe named as your go-to, as we all age, sometimes they become not appropriate. They've moved away. There's been a falling out in the relationship. Maybe they're incapacitated or have predeceased. And so keeping those current is really important.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to stay on that topic of change in life and everything, talking about second marriages, divorce, things like that, when you have blended families and everything. How do you manage all of that diminished capacity in situations where a loved one is starting to be unable to make choices for themselves and whatnot? So we'll dive into those topics and more when we come back here with Dustin Plummer. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everybody. Jim Inman here, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you for tuning in this week. Glad to be here behind the microphone. David will be back in the studio next week for you. Hard to believe that September is right around the corner. Football season with the Hoosiers will begin in just a couple of weeks. I talked with a friend of mine in IU Athletics Wednesday night, because it depends on what night people are listening. The last official ticket through IU Athletics for any football game was sold yesterday. There's not like one in the corner in the back, you know, northeast section, there is not one ticket left this coming season.
I'm not surprised. I'm actually surprised there was one ticket left.
Well, that's what I was telling one of the guys in the office, the same thing, and that's what he said as well. And I said, well, you know, it's one of those, like, right in the center, 49th row here, like, yeah, like just those ones, and it's, that's what it is. So you cannot buy a ticket now, officially. Now, there's all the resellers and everything, so I'm not advocating for anything like that. I'm just simply saying there are no, there is no more room at the inn.
I'm excited for it to start. Last year was amazing. Still feels like a dream. Let's do it again.
I know. I know. Trophies have been out, and I haven't seen the new trophy room in the real yet, but I've seen photos. It's kind of cool looking.
I'm sure it's full.
With room to grow, we'll just say that. So, yeah. We're talking estate planning with my good friend Dustin Plummer here, and this section, we're going to talk a little bit about hard conversations that families tend to avoid. It can be a little bit challenging and whatnot, and I'm sure that you have people who come in and need us to do estate planning for themselves, but I'm sure you also have situations where it is children coming in who say, we're seeing mom and dad are needing to come in and they're not willing to just yet, or mom or dad are struggling and we need to have them start making decisions. How do you work yourself into those situations to say, you know, I think your son, your daughter, whoever are right, and we want to get this ball rolling?
Well, if I'm actually having the conversation, that means that there is at least some willingness from mom or dad to come in, which is half the battle sometimes.
Yep.
You're right. A lot of times these conversations get put off potentially too long.
Mm-hmm.
The good news sometimes is capacity for estate planning purposes is sometimes a fairly low bar. And I will also say, as people age, that capacity is not a static thing. In other words, somebody, you know, I'm sure we've all seen people who have had good days and bad days,
mm-hmm.
is the term that's often thrown around. Or sometimes it's, yeah, mornings are not great, but afternoons, they kind of rally and they kind of get it together. And so there is a window sometimes where maybe they can't sign at one point in time, but they can in another, and that's fine. But generally speaking, boy, you sure don't want to wait that long.
Right, right.
Especially, it depends. A common theme that we get is we don't want the nursing homes to get all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so Medicaid planning is a huge topic. It's not one that our office deals with. But one of the biggest things is sometimes we'll get a phone call that says, hey, we just took mom or dad. We had to put them in a nursing home. How do we protect the money? Well, the reality is often by that point in time, it's too late. There's a 5-year look back period. And so some of these things you need to be planning pretty far in advance before you get into the situation of, you know, let's not try to play this too close. So a common conversation I'll have is, if somebody just recently got a dementia diagnosis or something like that, hopefully, if nothing else has done it, that should trigger a warning bell,
mm-hmm.
that lets people know, all right, we need to get in and actually get this taken care of.
Okay. So in situations like that, and maybe say that timing is starting to become a little bit more urgent, the discussion may come up of who becomes the power of attorney. And you've got children, maybe you have even adult grandchildren, you have in-laws, so you've got children or spouses of children and whatnot. So you've got a number of folks who may be available to be that decision maker, that power of attorney. Do you have, for lack of better terms, like a cheat sheet of here are some ideal criteria of what you look for in that candidate? It's something that you might even give to a family that says, you, if you want to make the decision, here are the things that you should consider in making the choice of the power of attorney.
So those are all very fact-dependent situations.
Mm-hmm.
But just generally speaking, you're going to want to have somebody, number one, that you trust very, implicitly.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, you're going to want somebody who has some financial sense about themselves and that you trust. So you want to trust that they're not going to try to take and pocket all of the money or anything like that. But also, they're going to be the ones who are responsible for making decisions of, you know, is it time to sell a house? And if so, how are they going to go about selling it? They could be dealing with things besides just, we always think about like bill paying and things like that, but this could also include filing income tax returns. It can entail dealing with, you know, your required minimum distributions out of qualified retirement accounts, dealing with insurance. So it's a very big job if somebody's truly incapacitated for a longer period of time. So trying to get someone you think that has enough sophistication, responsibility, and things like that,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what you're looking for there.
Do you even advocate, and again, it's not uncommon in the world today where you have blended families and, you know, second marriages, even third marriages. I mean, do you ever advocate of like, look towards, I hate to say it this way, but like the biological children, the, you know, where it's those that have been there since day one, so to speak. Whereas, you know, stepchildren or whatever, I mean, I'm not trying to knock anybody, but, you know, sometimes you can get into some hurt feelings of people because it's like, I am the blood relative, so to speak. I mean, honestly, you get into some serious emotional sides in this.
There can be a lot of counseling that happens in these conversations.
I'm sure,
as well.
Like you probably do have to put your Lucy couch out and drop your nickel in for the counseling session type thing.
That's right. Well, and you know, I will say what I think is many times a mistake. Not always. Many times I'll see clients who they want to name all of the kids because they mm-hmm. don't want to hurt anybody's
sure.
feelings. The problem is, you know, one of the children is a physician that works, you know, 60, 70 hours a week. One lives halfway across the world
mm-hmm.
or different things like that. Really, it's a nice gesture. It's a nice thought. But oftentimes, it's only going to make things more complicated because even though we can put in there that the people named have the ability to act independently, many institutions play by their own rules as the financial institutions. And so they will want everybody to sign off. And if there are, it can just make it more complicated than necessary.
Yeah. This is no fun.
It can bring up some difficult conversations as you nailed that one.
I kind of imagine that you've had a moment, and I know this is very TikTok theater kind of thing, but you're at the head of the long conference table and it's a dark room and everybody's sitting on either side and, you know, the finger pointing across the way and you did this and blah, blah, blah kind of thing. You've had to have one of those moments in your history. I just feel I have. When we come back.
it's when things go off the rails in the world of probate, it is one of the only areas I think that can even be more contentious than family law.
Really?
Because I would say in a divorce situation, you have a relationship's worth of hurt, frustration, anger.
Yeah.
In the probate world, it's a lifetime's worth. And so they're even held at an even deeper level sometimes when people really go at each other.
When do you see families typically start this estate planning process? Are people in their 50s and their adult children are, you know, 20 something, maybe 30 years old, or is it when retirement age and, you know, their adult children are starting their families and whatnot? Is it truly across the board?
It's all over the board. I would say in a time when people really need to be thinking about it is especially even if new families. So with families with minor children,
mm-hmm.
really need to start that conversation about setting up trust for their minor children in case something happened to mom and dad.
Yep.
It can make a world of difference in what things are going to look like for the kids after if anything were to happen. And so actually I'll say even right now, and we've got, you know, it's been a crazy week here in Bloomington with everybody moving in to IU.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a lot more clients who we are preparing advance directives for their children before they go off to college.
Yes.
And really it's a good idea because they're 18. Guess what? They're their own decision makers. And if something happens, it's not as automatic as when they were minors.
Yeah. We had a situation at work a couple of years ago with clients whose adult child was in college out west and was in an accident and was in the hospital. And, you know, mom and dad had every good intention and everything. We're trying to work with the doctors out there. But, you know, there's no direct indication that they could prove over the telephone and everything that they were mom and dad to their daughter and trying to get medical information and, you know, medical care approvals and all of the things and everything. And you're kind of helpless when your child's 20 and lives 1,000 miles away and
we've
lesson learned.
HIPAA and all its good intentions go completely awry in those situations.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very, very tough. So something to think about. Let's take a break. When we come back, I love my kids and my grandkids, but I don't want them getting all the money all at once. What do parents and grandkids or grandparents often say, or when they say, I trust my grandchildren and my children, but I'm worried what a large inheritance might do. I'll learn to talk. I said I was really good at the radio earlier, but apparently not. What options do these folks might have? We'll take a break and come right back. Your Money with David Hayes. And welcome back once again to Your Money with David Hayes. Jim Inman here in the studio along with my good friend Dustin Plummer here. We are talking estate planning. If you've got any questions about the show or the topic, or if you want to ask any questions about anything you've heard on any of our shows, you can always head over to cfci.us and click on Contact Us or request an appointment or anything there and submit your question, and we will get that answered for you within a day or so. I think we've got Dustin linked on our featured links page as well, so you can reach out through us there. We can get any questions over to him as well and get you fixed up that way. But we were talking in this segment about giving money to kids and grandkids and anyone really in general and making sure that they do it the right way. And earlier in the show, I mentioned having somebody call in the last week or so about wanting our office, a financial firm, to review a trust that this gentleman had written with the help of AI. And I politely said that, you know, that wasn't something in our wheelhouse because we are not a legal firm, and he needed to contact an attorney, and he did not want to use an attorney because he wanted to be very specific about what his wishes and goals were, and he didn't want anybody else telling him how to do that. That's perfectly fine if you want to go that route. So I'm kind of curious if a trust is the best option always. If somebody says, I want to do this, this, and this, Dustin, is that the right way to do it? Or do they do a will? Or do they do the beneficiary forms? I mean, combination of all things. How do people put their laundry list together the right way?
I'll give you the best legal answer. It depends.
Well, I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you for coming in today.
Yep.
We'll talk to everybody next week. See ya.
Take care. It does depend, but I will say a lot of times if people have very specific wishes, and depending on how far they want to take those wishes, trusts are often a good instrument. So I always describe trusts as an infinitely flexible legal document, meaning they're used for all kinds of different things. Sometimes people will say, well, I definitely want a trust, and I'll say, well, tell me why you want a trust, and they'll go through and explain some things. We go, okay, well, trust may not be the most appropriate instrument here. Or sometimes people come in and say, I absolutely don't want a trust. And we say, well, why not? And oftentimes it's, well, I knew somebody and they could never get any money out of the trust. And it was just a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Well, I know from some of the trusts that I've helped create, it depends what we use fancy terms, either the settlor, the grantor, the trustor, the person who set up the trust. Sometimes the whole intent behind it is to restrict access to those funds. And
right.
So it may have performed exactly as intended, but to a third party, they go, oh, this could be a nightmare. You know, if you're concerned about a party getting all of that money up front, then a trust often is going to be the best instrument to make that happen. Not universally, but it is a common way, I'll say.
Okay. So you're a very good friend of mine. I do not question your expertise or anything like that. But I do have a question, though. When in doing that trust, do people ever take a trust to get a second opinion? And the reason I say that is because if you write up something and I tell you this is what I want, and I say this in all kindness, how do I know that what you have done is the way it is what I want it to be done as?
That's a great question. So it does happen sometimes where sometimes people will take their documents and go to another attorney to have them review it. Really, though, what I would say is you're going to want that document written in plain enough English that you should be able to understand it. And you know, there may need to be some conversations. There are a few terms of art. You know, we try to keep the Latin out of our documents, but there's a few phrases. Per stirpes is a real key one that we want to see in those documents a lot of times. But no, I'd say there, other than the expense of it, there's nothing wrong at all with going and getting a second opinion.
I didn't know if there were a bunch of wherefore art thous or anything like that.
It depends on who's drafting it.
That's fair. I mean, that makes perfect sense. I mean, absolutely. Is it possible to encourage good financial behavior without being overly controlling? Do you see families who say, do families prepare their heirs and say, I'm going to leave you this money, but I'm expecting you to do only this, this, and this? Or do they just give me the keys, let's go?
Your question there, overly, is the key word, and that's a very subjective word.
Yep.
So it depends on whether we're talking about the beneficiary or the person who's leaving the money, on who's gauging what is overly controlling.
Okay.
I do think there is, I'll just speak to my preference in general. I often recommend to clients that they consider leaving a lot of discretion to the trustee. The reason for that is I think we tend to do a pretty poor job as human beings of planning very far out into the future. You know, if we were sitting here in 2019 and we were making plans about what's the world going to look like over the next 5 years, I think we probably would not have done a very good job.
Not at all.
And I think actually we could go over almost any 10-year span, and there's going to be some event that nobody saw coming, or at least we would have done a poor job of planning for if we were being overly prescriptive in our plans.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's very key to get somebody that you trust their judgment who can make some real-time judgments. You talk about AI, for example. That wasn't on the radar even less than 5 years ago. I mean, it was just starting to come up about 5 years ago. And for a lot of people, this is the first year it's really started to, they've interacted with it. And so, you know, having people, you've had the SpaceX IPO, now you're talking about Anthropic's IPO. If you tried to set forth an ironclad investment policy to make sure to stay away from computers, well, that might not look so good today.
This is true. This is true. One last thing. Can you set up the idea, I guess you might call them staggered distributions, where you say you have to hit, you know, at 25 you get this, 30 you get this, or once you get your college degree you get this, or in your master's degree, or once you buy your home, I mean, things that you have to hit certain criteria in order to receive any kind of funds or benefits or anything?
Absolutely. So
really?
Those are often referred to as part of what you were talking about is often referred to as an incentive trust, meaning, you attain this degree or different things like that, then you can have this right of withdrawal a lot of times, or sometimes it's set up as an automatic distribution. Other times they are often age-based. And, you know, what this all boils down to is trade-offs. So a little bit of control or a lot of control can be a good thing, but the trade-off is you're going to inject further complexity into the plan, meaning you're oftentimes, if you're trying to protect those assets, you may have a third party or an independent trustee. There may be questions about investments and long-term investments, and so it is going to increase the complexity, but you're hopefully going to be able to promote more of the items that you're looking for.
Let's take a break. When we come back, one more segment with Dustin here. Beneficiaries, mistakes, and family legacy. We have talked often about the beneficiary form versus the will and which one trumps which. And we'll talk about that and how often people should actually review their estate plan and a little bit more. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Jim Hinman here in the studio on this very, very, very nice weekend here in Bloomington. Hopefully, the monsoons haven't affected everybody in the world. It's been a little bit crazy. Have you had, how many inches of rain have you had at your house? Any idea?
I have no, a lot.
Have you?
I have no idea.
What, didn't
much.
You have some barn stuff go on recently over the summer or something like that? Am I prying too deep? I apologize
no,
if so. But
no, not at all. Just, had a leak in the roof,
okay.
But got that under control.
So it's fixed now before all this other stuff happened.
Correct. We survived this one with flying colors.
Okay. Good. I am one of those people, and I know this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but in my next life, I kind of want to be one of these people that carries around like one of those big corkscrew things that when you see the grate that's clogged, I want to be able to get that corkscrew thing and take all the clog out and just watch it drain and like get that personal satisfaction of like,
That's right.
I don't know why that fascinates me so much, but I see these videos on Instagram
I was getting ready
or whatever.
To say, you've been watching too much YouTube, haven't you?
But I mean, it's one of those like just relaxation, personal satisfaction things.
There's a lot of instant gratification in watching those whirlpools
of all the things in the world, like just that, look at this. And I don't know, but anyway, I listeners, I apologize. It's Dustin and me. We're just hanging out. So you're the fly on the wall for the next 8 to 10 minutes or so. We're talking estate planning. And before we wrap up with Dustin here, beneficiaries and mistakes and things like that. So beneficiary forms, most every account in some way, shape, or form, investments, banking, things like that have beneficiary forms, and a beneficiary form trumps a will. Correct, sir?
You are 100% correct.
I was going to say, if you change that on me, we are stopping this and changing something, because I've gone by that for 20 plus years.
No, they are the bane of the estate planner's existence. Or beneficiary forms. And I say that because, you know, people will come in and craft these estate plans, and, you know, especially if people want to have specific bequests. Maybe they want to leave a little money to IU Athletics, mm-hmm. or, you know, their local church, or nieces, nephews, grandkids, and they've put in these specific bequests, meaning they're going to get a certain dollar amount. And then what we will see sometimes is all of their accounts have beneficiary designations in place. If they no longer have a home, let's say they've sold and they've moved out, there may not be an estate to fulfill those specific bequests.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of the best laid plans can go by the wayside if those beneficiary designations aren't coordinated and kind of dovetail with the overall estate plan.
Does it turn into a courtroom drama then? Like, is there a time limit of when you can present that beneficiary form if it's found 10 years after an estate settled and like, aha, I found out that I was supposed to have gotten some money kind of thing? Are we watching a Sunday night HBO drama kind of thing?
10 years is going to be a little too long for that.
Okay.
And the bigger issue, though, is it would be the liability of the institution that paid out in kind of contravention of the beneficiary designation. So that is the institutions where those are at are going to be the ones controlling the release of the assets.
Okay. I'm looking at my list here of what we had here, and I think most of these we have talked about, but I had a couple of rapid fire questions, and I think we wanted to talk about a couple of these. So one thing that you had mentioned in our email exchange, importance of password managers and digital assets.
Yes. So this is becoming such a more prominent issue, I would say, in the estate planning world, as lively as that is. Yes, it used to be that if somebody passed away and somebody got dropped in as a personal representative or a trustee and they needed to figure out what was going on, the worst case scenario was you would get the mail forwarded, and over the next 3 to 6 months, you would have statements and everything mailed in a way that they would be able to figure out essentially what the individual had.
Mm-hmm.
Anymore, people are going digital, and so you may not get any paper statements ever over the course of a year. Even a lot of the tax documents now are starting to come by email. And so if you are living your life online, you need to make sure that your personal representative is going to be able to actually get in and access those documents, understand where the accounts are. One of the biggest roadblocks to that are passwords. And so making sure that you are using some kind of a password manager or a passkey system is kind of a newer thing in technology that some people are starting to use. And making sure that somebody has access to be able to get in and get there. We can do it with a legal approach once in a court's involvement. But again, we're trying to optimize here for efficiency and cost. And if we're having to go around to, you know, innumerable institutions just trying to find out whether the decedent had an account, that's not going to be very efficient.
We've got about 60 to 90 seconds, so one final question. What's one mistake you see over and over that is completely avoidable? We're down to 60 seconds.
Yeah. I'm counting on post-production for this one.
All right, we'll switch. How often should powers of attorney be updated?
They may not need to be updated very often. I think they should be reviewed every 3 to 5 years. A lot of times, things are still fine, but
Least reviewed.
Correct. Just reviewed to make sure there's no change in the law. This isn't a power of attorney, but you know there was the change in required minimum distributions.
It
required a lot of updates in trust documents. In 2016, we got the Digital Powers Act. So giving those powers of attorney the ability to get in and deal with digital assets, that was an update in 2016. So if you're running around with a 30-year-old power of attorney, you might want to consider updating it.
Okay. We'll be right back. Wrap up the show real quick. Your Money with David Hayes. About 60 seconds left, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Your Money with David Hayes. David will be back in the studio next week. Thank you for joining me. Dustin Plummer, much appreciated, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
If anybody wants to reach out to you, how do they find you on the big old World Wide Web?
It is www.lawmgp.com.
Wonderful. And, of course, you can go to cfci.us and find us there as well. Send us a question. If you've got anything that you want to know more about, let us know. And, again, thezonebloomington.com. Listen to the show there. We'll be back on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. as well and all over your podcast platforms as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay dry, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.